Sometime around Thanksgiving 2014 or 15, one or the other, that's U.S. Thanksgiving, Greg and I visited China. And as a part of our visit to China, we went to the Hong Kong Light Fair. And there was a giant sign when you walk in there that said, "We concentrate on corn light." And I just laughed my head off because I remember talking to Greg and thinking, you know, these guys just took the Chinese expression of, you know, maybe we focus on making corn cob lights or something like that. They put it into Google Translate, and then they plastered it all over the show in English. So interesting times back then. Wild Cowboy West times. Things are settling down a little bit. On today's show, we talk about exterior lighting. We do a deep dive, one of our deep dive series, where we talk about, hey, what would we do in this situation, or how would you handle that, and different areas of exterior lighting that we find interesting. And Greg and I bantered back and forth about what we would do if. So enjoy, lighting dorks. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Keystone Technologies. Go to KeystoneTech.com, baby, KeystoneTech.com. They concentrate on being the retrofit kings. Matt, Scotty, throw that screen up on the YouTube there for the viewers. Greggy, what do you think of Keystone today?
Yeah, today we're going to talk about their expander series, which is a cob type of light. But what it does is expand out. So it looks like a cob to start, and you can actually expand and open it up so you can get 180 degrees of light and really focus the light where you need it to versus omnidirectional. A lot of times in exterior lights, you don't need omnidirectional lighting. This helps you focus it down. It saves up to 70% over traditional HID. And as we know, with all LED, it lasts longer in addition to the energy savings. And there's going to be a good payback for doing it. And a lot of times you're getting brighter light out of it. So if you are going to concentrate on cobs, or if you're going to sell any cobs, check out Keystone.
For sure. Go to KeystoneTech.com. It's KeystoneTech.com. And this episode of the podcast and every show of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast is in association with the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org. Hope this episode comes out before the convention. Check us out in Reno in April. We're all rolling in hot there. But for right now, check out the Outdoor Exterior Lighting Deep Dive with Greg and Mike. Yeah, so what's happening, buddy?
Let's go. Hey, we're getting back after it. I think we're going to do another deep dive today.
Ooh, what I don't know why.
On exterior. So,
oh, baby.
Exterior is a broad subject, but there's a lot that goes on with exterior. So I want to kind of dive into that and start with the first thing I do if I know I'm going to be involved in an exterior lighting retrofit or have to do anything with exterior lighting is I print a Google map of the location. I can't tell you how much that helps.
Print the map. I quote based on that.
On the map. Yeah, you can see a lot right there.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes I quote based on the Google Earth or whatever. You can see it.
That can be done. It can be dangerous, but it can be done.
I've done it, man.
I've done it too. I have too. I won't lie about that. But if I'm going to a site, I'm going to physically print it. And I'm going to bring it with me.
Sure.
Because then what I can do is draw right on there versus a piece of paper. It makes it so much better long term. So that's my first point.
Sure.
So print that map.
I would say is like when you're on the phone with the guy, go to Google Earth, look at his street view or whatever and say, hey, what do you got there? You got four wall packs? Yeah. And I'm just going to slide up here. You got four poles with two double heads on it? Yeah. You know the wattage of those lights? Yeah. Those are the ones you want to change? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, I just emailed you the quote.
Done.
Yeah.
I like that. So that can work. It can be dangerous, as you know with exterior. Yeah. There's a lot of variables, but
sure.
We're going to get
into it. Preliminary quote.
Preliminary budget.
Budget.
So we've got the first thing. I think you get that little map or something that you can actually draw on because it makes it so much easier to follow in the long run.
For sure.
All right. And then the next thing that I think is important to do is get to know the location. And by the location, I mean where the city is or what city ordinances or codes might pertain to that area.
Yeah.
So at least in Minnesota, and I'm guessing where you're at too, every different city can have a different code that you have to meet. So that alone can totally change what you're going to recommend. And we have one notorious city here called Bloomington. And they make you basically relight your whole exterior if you're going to touch one. If you leave the crappy metal halides up, they don't care. It's way underlit. They don't care. If you're going to make it LED, you better make it really good LED. And a lot of times you end up having to add things, poles, fixtures, which, as you know, there's no payback in doing that. So I avoid Bloomington in my area, but it's something that you do need to know that because that can matter. Do you guys have that same idea or different,
You know what?
whatever you
It's
call them?
I mean, I've never. I mean, I'm gonna maybe show my lack of knowledge here, and maybe that I should know this, but I'm not aware of. I generally there's not. We haven't gotten ourselves. We've done a ton of outdoor lighting, but the Ontario Building Code is there, and there are like in the municipality of Toronto, they do have a separate code. But most municipalities are just Ontario Building Code, so they're not different. That's my hey guys out there. You know what? If you know that I'm wrong, tell me. Come on, put some comments on the website, and we'll get point us in the right direction on this. That's something to know, actually. That's maybe a podcast right there. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's important for us as long as we're generally following what they existingly have. I don't think I've seen it, but you know what? I could be wrong. I could have exposed myself there. Woo! I learned on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Better get that figured out. Go ahead.
Yeah, and the reason I know that is because I've made the mistake in the past. So you learn from your mistakes.
I remember your lens issue. Remember we were walking around Light Fair looking for some stupid lens for an underground parking garage? Was
That
that
was
Bloomington?
Bloomington.
Yeah.
That was Bloomington.
You're like, I
So
gotta find
that
some stupid lens to put on this fixture. And we're like
was
scouring Light Fair for this stupid lens. Did you find
You're
it?
right. No, well, we ended up doing like a reflector. Yeah, I actually did find it. It was like, yeah, it was a while ago, 8 years ago or so.
Yeah.
And we got it fixed, but it was a big cost to it. And then we met their code, supposedly, but whatever.
I
That's
should write
another
the I
story.
should write the codes.
Do it right. Yeah. So, that is something to be aware of and be ready
Sure.
for. So know that stuff, right? All right. And then now you're at the site, you have your map, you know the city codes, anything you need to be ready for. Now you got to get to know the application, like anything with lighting. So what is it lighting? Exterior, is it lighting a parking lot? Is it a walkway? Is it a parking garage? Is it a gas station? Is it, what else can we do for exterior? Flag? Is it a sign? A building area, whatever it might be. Outdoor. So you need to know that.
Yeah, I think with that, you kind of maybe you're going to get to this. And you told me, okay, keep going. You told me not to jump in. All right, go.
Yeah, well, no, you can jump, but it's probably going to be covered because
Those are good. Those are good.
so the application, the other thing you need to know is the current lighting adequate? And the application and what it's meant to light, is it adequate? Are there security concerns? I was at a site today that had air conditioning units all on the ground, all of them torn apart, all the copper ripped out.
Oof.
And gone, so they don't have any AC handling units anymore. And it all came down to that area wasn't lit,
What do you have a
so
bunch of
people couldn't use
filthy
it.
animals running around Minnesota ripping coil
St.
units
Paul,
out of
man, I
what the heck is
guess.
going on there? I mean, come on,
Crazy.
if you're gonna steal something, how much is the copper in an air conditioner worth?
Who knows? And the
Uh,
way
50
they, how much
bucks?
work, yeah, I have no clue, but how much work they put into it was, it looked crazy to me. But
Oh my goodness.
is there a security concern in this application? There is. And then the other thing too with the application that I run into is security cameras. Are there security cameras? And if
Sure.
there are, you want to make sure you're lighting the area so that the cameras can see. Do you have anything else on the application side of it? Like
Yeah,
not the fixture?
I mean, there's my perception, but I'm often not there at night. You know what I mean? Like, it's rare that I would go and see an application and when it's actually dark outside. It might happen, but usually not, right? So what I try to do is when I can, is I talk to the guy. The guy that's asking me to do the quote is often not the person that knows anything about the outdoor lighting. So I try to find a superintendent, someone that's on the site, not at night, and I ask them about what's going on. What's going on? What's happening over here? And I had a site today. This is a perfect example. Guy calls me up and he's like, "Yeah, you know what? Down this alley, we have a lot of attics and there's needles everywhere." And did you know that the number one solution to that, I'm going to say it on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, what you do is you use blue light. So what you do is you change out the lights to something real. I'm not talking about 6500K. I'm talking about a blue light, like something that's a blue colored bulb. And then what happens is the attics can't see their veins, so they don't shoot up there.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, so you blast them in blue light. And then they're down the alley, and they're like, Jesus Christ, what's going on? I'm trying to get my vein. I can't see it, man. I can't fucking see it. And they get out of there, and they leave. They go somewhere else to shoot up.
Sure.
So, yeah. So that was the recommendation for this morning from Michael Colligan. Goes like, do that right now. So
what do you sell for a blue light?
What I do is I get a 6500. Oh, God, I'm giving away all my trade secrets here, buddy. I'm giving away.
I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to do a blue light. Go.
I get a VaporTite 6500K light, and you throw a blue tube sleeve over top of it. Sure. So you get the maximum blue light you can. Or you can, if they have just screw-in bulbs in the old – you didn't know that? That's an old lighting trick there, dude.
I don't think we have a lot of heroin addicts here.
Just AC thieves.
Yeah. Right. At least I haven't run into it yet. So,
but just AC thieves in Minnesota. Just people ripping out the coils on air conditioners. No addicts, though. Right? That's Toronto.
It's too cold to be in. Too cold to be in alleys here.
It's freezing
that,
here too, bro. It's freezing.
I suppose,
here too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they get down in those alleys and it's really right down in the core of Toronto, and that's a popular solution. And it even works pretty good if they have like one of those dual heads, and just screw in a blue par 38, bud, halogen.
Okay.
Probably have LEDs right. Like that. Now it doesn't come up that much, but every now and then I've done that, and it seems. And you know what they do it too? They also do. You can also do it inside public washrooms. I'll send you the link. I should actually post the link to the research article on this because it's actually researched. So there you go. Whoa, that just came out of nowhere, eh?
Let's do it. All right. So there you go. You need to know that application and anything else on the application of it that you can think of.
Yeah. I mean, also you want to be, you like, for me, I really don't like dark sky compliant outdoor wall lighting. Mm-hmm. What is it? $20 for the shade? I don't know.
Right. Yep. I'll do it right.
You know, I tell the customers like this is dark sky compliant, so that's adding whatever. It's adding $400 to the job of a $5,000 job. So you're doing it.
Yeah.
Oh, but I want the light to reach out further. That's the problem, right? Because it cuts it off a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, that's always there's always a play there with that. How do you handle that?
I haven't run into. I mean, most of the stuff we're doing is a dark sky, but there are times where the traditional wall pack look is, if that's kind of where you're going, where they want that kind of that uplight that comes from it in a way.
Yeah,
and you have to do that at times, and I have seen some applications, and I mentioned it in the previous one. You got mad at it. You said to buy a new camera, but I did a cutoff, and the camera was above it, so it couldn't. It couldn't see the light anymore. It couldn't see that. It needed that uplight to shoot out. Mm. So an old camera for sure, but they didn't want to invest in that. So they changed that one back to a kind of the original wall pack look.
Yeah.
So
you know what? You know what's interesting? There's all sorts of pitfalls in outdoor lighting, dude.
Well, we're getting into them. All right.
Okay.
So application we've got. Now we got to get to know the operations, all right? Mm-hmm. Number one, and speaking of pitfalls, is it operational? Does it actually work right now? Hmm. You know, is that fixture in the outdoor, does it work?
Sure.
Is it wired? Is there wiring going to it? like you get into it and you got a pole out here and you change it and they say, well, it doesn't work. Well, it hasn't worked for 10 years. Okay. So you haven't had power to it.
So
ever.
You have to. Have you ever had to like get one of those trenchless diggers to do a new to go under the parking lot to get to the other side to pull the new wire through?
Expensive.
Yeah, dude, that's like $5,000 a day.
Yeah, not cheap. So you got to know that.
It is. And messy as heck, dude. You see the dirt they suck out of the ground? It's crazy, dude. So you may want to ask that. That's a good question. I've gotten nailed by that. It's like, oh, sorry, man.
Yeah. For sure. And then you just go out and you're counting the outdoor lights. You say, there's a light, count it. But then you find out it's never been operational and you need to rewire it. And that's a huge expense.
Yeah, pre-existing
and then you put
electrical,
up a light that they
yeah,
can
but
use.
Pre-existing electrical deficiencies are not included, my friend.
In your contract. That's a good move. In most people's contracts, I would think. Other things. How is it controlled? Is it an individual photocell on the fixture? Is it a central photocell that controls multiple fixtures?
What do you
is
like?
Is it a timer?
What do you prefer?
Or is it a switch or a sensor? Mm-hmm. What I like central photocells.
Yeah, me too.
Number one, Yeah, the cost per fixture adds up. Then you have another failure point at every
Yep.
fixture. And then
A
if that
bird sh
one
a bird
fixture
takes a
goes
crap
out,
on it. No, but if a bird takes a crap on
yeah.
it too. You know,
Yeah.
I you know, it's like those things get dirty. It's just another maintenance point. I
Right.
bet you a lot of the failed outdoor lighting out there or whatever, a lot of it is because the photocell got dirty and it burned 24/7.
Sure. Yeah, and that can happen.
Yeah. It's like these guys, you know, like new entrants into the lighting game, not traditional outdoor lighting people, made the fixture and they didn't know where the right spot for the photocell was, and they put it in a spot and it just got covered in dirt and it just stayed on all night long, all day long, and so it's running 24/7.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
So that kind of brings up, so you need to know the controls because that factors in what you're going to do. And then the operating hours. Now, what's your thing for dusk to dawn? What do you plug in? It's a number you should know right offhand,
Yeah,
right?
4,100.
I go 4368.
4,368. I go 4,100,
Yeah.
dude. Why do you go 4,368?
I don't know. I was just thinking that. Is it 12 by 365?
Well, you
That's
know, I just.
4380.
I don't know. I don't
That's a
know
good
why I went
question.
4,100. I don't know. I just always did 4,100. I at some point back, I know I went and looked at it and said, you know, something or other, but I don't know. 4,100 has been my number. But hey, what are we off? 5% from each other?
Yeah, but I don't know why 4368. There's no sense in
Yeah,
that.
because maybe that's your best case scenario, best realistic case scenario. So you want to max that savings out for the customer or whatever. I don't know.
We have a
4,100,
few more hours of
4,360.
darkness.
Yeah, it may be. No, you know what? Minnesota is probably at the level of Sudbury, so it's probably true, actually.
Maybe.
Like Toronto is significantly is about 4 hours further south than Minneapolis is. That's probably it, right there.
It's 364 times 12 is 4368.
Oh, so you're doing the simple calculation. I was hoping then you'd
Yeah.
come off that. No, we did looked at the 10 years ago. I looked at the average daylight hours in Toronto and some sheet, and it gave me 4,100. But I don't think so. I think it just threw a number at it. Pretty
Yeah.
much, that's
No, and
close.
why 364 instead of 365? Maybe Christmas the lights are off. I don't know. But that's the number I've always used. You're at 4100. I like it. So know the operating hours, because if it's a timer, it could be different. It could be way different. It could be 3 hours a
I
night
hate timers, dude.
versus,
It's like, what a
I
pain in the
know.
butt. Get that timer out
Yeah.
of there, bro. Get that timer out of
Keep
there.
the
Just
lights on.
drill a hole from the other side and put a photocell in or something, man. Get that. I hate timers. Hate timers.
They can make sense. So if they're lighting an area that doesn't need to be lit for longer than they need to be lit,
Yeah.
time it. But I'm with you. I hear you. Okay, so you need to know that, and then voltage. That's a huge piece, at least for us. Is it 120, 277, or is it 480? Or in your case, whatever made up
347.
number you guys have.
Yeah.
There you go. So you need to know that, because that
Sure.
totally can change how you're doing it. And a lot of exterior lighting here, at least, is 480. Even if it, an interior, you can usually tell if something might be 480. Exterior, you can't tell. It can be a few fixtures up to a few hundred, but it's all about how far you have to run the power a lot of times. So note that, be aware of that, because that can totally change what you're recommending.
Sure.
You got anything else on the operation side of it?
Well, I mean, on the operation side of it, we'll know if it's HPS or metal allied. That's a good one.
Well, that's coming.
Okay, sorry. I don't,
Okay.
operational side. I mean, okay. I mean, yeah, no, you're good. You covered it for me.
Okay, all right. So that's the beauty of doing these and not talking about them at all before. We
Yeah,
don't
for
know what we're
sure.
going to talk about. All
Ooh.
right. So this next one, and the biggest one, is to get to know the current fixture. All right. So you have whatever fixture it is. First of all, what kind of fixture is it? Is it an area light? Is it a bollard? Is it a wall pack? Is it a flood? Is it a spot? Canopy? Pole? What else we got?
Sure.
Recessed can? Anything
Yeah,
that you
sure.
see outside
Yeah.
can be. So know what the fixture is, and note that. Because that
Yeah, you
can
got,
play
there's a
a
lot of
role.
different, and yeah, it could also be like, you know, sometimes you have those little tiny 35 watt HPS wall packs. You can just change the light bulb there if it's 120 volt.
You can, yeah, definitely. Okay, then you got the fixture. What condition is it in? The sockets, the lens, the housing, the reflectors, are they all
Do you
intact?
go, but do you do that deep a dive into it, man?
You
You
can.
open up an outdoor fixture?
No. You never open it up.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, yeah,
Come on, bro.
you can note that, hey, your lenses are broken, or they're yellow, or they're gone, or the
Yeah.
reflector, or the socket. If you can see any of this stuff,
Sure.
then note that. Note whatever
you can
see.
There's a big bird's nest on that pole.
Yes, get that bird's nest out. If it's a pole, and that's important, if it is a fixture that has a pole, you got to note the condition of the pole. Because that can,
I hate
that,
that
can
dude.
Totally
that scares me. Also
I do
the
too.
Base. Also the base.
Yeah. Yes.
So like one of our, yeah, you look at these bases, sometimes the base is cracked and we go to the client and we say, look, you know, I don't know about this pole thing. You guys got to change the bases, and we lose gigs over that sometimes. Because we'll be saying,
yeah,
look,
so
you know, we got to resync the base, and we got to redo the pole, and we got to get the dirt analysis from this area, how deep we have to go, but all that stuff with that. Sinking poles is a pain in the butt, dude, especially if they're tall.
Oh, for sure. So you want to note the condition of the fixture, or you know, the pole or whatever it might be, the whatever component that goes along with the fixture. So note that. Also note the color. And this has happened before,
bronze,
where you know,
yeah, black,
there's
bronze,
bronze is the most common, probably black, but then there are people that have gray, there's green, there's blue, there's white, there's any, every color, there's red,
sure,
you know,
sure.
People can have all of these colors, and you need to note that, because if you go in on a gray pole and put a bronze head, you know, at night nobody notices, but during the day they say, why did you do that? I want these gray. And you got to go figure that out. So note that. What color is it? All right. How
is it
round? Mounted? Yeah, the shape. Yeah, that's good too. You want to know the shape. Exactly.
Is it square?
Yeah, I didn't
is
have
it
that
tapered?
On there.
Is it tapered?
Yeah.
Is it tapered? Oh, you're taking notes now, right? There you go. Is it tapered?
I write all this stuff out. Yep. Yeah. All right, good. So then how is it mounted? Is it a slip fitter? Is there an arm on it? Is it a half inch knuckle? Is it welded to a pole, or is it welded to whatever mounting device it is, where you need that, a whole new mounting? Is it a direct burial pole? If it's a pole, a cement based pole, is it recessed? Is it surface mounted?
Sure.
You know, with all the different light fixtures on the exterior, you need to know how it's mounted.
Sure.
So make sure you note that, all the different mounting types.
I'm with you.
All right. What size? What size is the existing fixture? And you brought up one of my favorite terms I've heard you say. I've heard you say a lot of things over the years. But what happens when you take a big wall pack and put a small wall pack in place?
Oh, you get a wall scar, son.
Wall scar.
You get a wall scar. Yeah, man. I mean, that's, you know what? That's amateur hour right there.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as I drive by a job and I see wall scars, I'm like, amateur hour. They hired some chump. Chump.
Yep.
Wall scar. Yep. Doesn't know how to roll.
Note that. Yeah. Yeah, you got to note that, because, you know, and you have to note what the wall type is. Is it a smooth wall? Is it textured?
Yeah,
is it brick?
Textured.
Is it
metal? Ribbed? Ribbed with
ribbed.
Sometimes they have these ribbed ones where it's like there's this flat spot for the wall pack. You ever seen that?
Yeah.
It's like ribbed and then there's a flat spot, and that's where the wall pack is, and then it's ribbed again.
Yep.
You know, you got to get that right, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, because it can totally factor in how you mount that thing, and if it mounts correctly. And I've seen a lot of wall packs, for example, that you mount to a ribbed wall, or a ribbed wall, and the water can get in behind the fixture and kill it.
Oh, for sure. Not only that, so, but I mean, and just, a lot of those like buildings, they a lot of guys don't seal around the outside of the wall pack. You got to seal that, man. You got to get some of that. I don't know what they use. It's like a LePage.
Caulk or
seal. Yeah, PLA. And you get the color of the fixture, bro.
Oh, yeah, that too.
They have brown caulk out there for that. Brown caulk out there for that. For that wall pack.
we'll cut that one as we go. All right, we talked about, is it operational? That was kind of in the operation side. Is it wired properly? All that stuff that we talked about already. We get the lamp type. We need to know that too. Obviously, you need to know that. Is it?
How do you figure that out? You know, so many times people don't know what the hell lamp they have.
So the one easy way is you can ask the customers: are your lights yellow or are they white?
Sure.
Right. If you can see the light itself, you should be able to tell what a high pressure sodium capsule inside looks like versus a metal halide. You know, bow tie.
Do you ever look up and take a wild guess at the wattage?
Oh yeah, all the time. All the time. That's So lamp type and wattage kind of go together. but you don't know on exterior. You know, rule of thumb on a pole light, if it's 20 feet tall or higher, it's 400 watt.
Could be 250, you know, though.
It could be 175. You know, 175 watt metal halide mogul looks not that far off of a 250 or 400. And all of that makes a huge difference. So
totally.
The more you can get and the more you know, the better, obviously, in any case.
So you see that the wall pack with the extended base. You know that's 250 up, right? You know the one that sticks out further and it's got that almost like that box on the back of it? You know that's 250 or up because that's the size of the ballast in that thing. The 175 usually fits in that larger case with the lamp. But yeah, sometimes you're really – sometimes I hate to say this, but sometimes I'm really like, yeah, let's go with 250.
I think everybody has to. There's no way you can do it unless the customer knows, and a lot of times they don't. And one way you can maybe find out is going where they keep their light bulbs and see if you can find something. That's you know, sometimes they're labeled, and or maybe you've sold them lights in the past, and then you can look in your history and say, oh, they're 250. And I do that all the time because you have to guess a lot, unfortunately, with exterior lighting. But you should know as close to as possible as you can what it is, metal halide, hypersodium.
Do you get out of your car when you do an outdoor lighting upgrade?
During the summer, yes. In the winter, I have the sky roof, and I just open and look, drive underneath it and look up.
Yeah.
But typically not. You know, there's times where you can't drive to and you have to get out, but try to stay inside.
Yeah, for sure. It's freezing outside. It's nasty weather today in Toronto. Okay, what's next?
Yep. All right, so we know the lamp, figure out the lamp type, what it is, and then how is it, and also the color. You know, you need to factor that in. Are they going to, is it residential, like a multi-housing where they want to keep a warm tone, or do they want to go bright white? I know that's a whole other subject where we can talk about what the right outdoor Kelvin temperature is. Probably won't dive into that yet on today's show, but another time. But yeah, that's something you need to factor in, at least with the customer's preferences.
I've tried so hard. I'm getting into it. I've tried so hard to sell a 3,000K outdoor lighting job. Nobody goes for it. Just like, come on, man. Yeah. We got to go to the guy. I'm like, so what we're going to do is an upgrade. We're going to upgrade you to 3,000 Kelvin. That's a more yellow, warmer color. Like, why do I want that? Well, because it's better. The CRI, it's the same. And no, man, we want to wait. I'm like, come on, man. Yeah. Just give me a 3,000K install here, man, so I can show everybody. Come on, man. Yeah. Can't get it, bro. Can't get it.
It's tough. But yeah, I don't know if that'll change or when that will. But
and a lot of manufacturers don't even have 3,000K.
No. A lot of 4Ks coming out, and I think that's becoming a little more popular than it always used to be 5K.
Sure.
Now at least I think some are going 4K. How is the lamp mounted? Is it horizontally mounted? Is it vertically mounted? Sure. Is it facing, is the base towards the front of the lot? Is the base towards the back of the lot or back of the pole? You know, you need to know where that base is mounted.
I'll tell you this. In those open canopy garage lights, the vertical base up metal halide produces way more usable light than the horizontal. Like it's way better for sure.
Omnidirectional kicks it out.
Yeah. It's just like double the efficiency. So if you're just like, 175 watts, always this, whatever your selection is, not necessarily, man. You got to watch that lamp mounting because I've seen a lot of 100, 175 metal halide in that where it's vertical base up. And it's just, it's actually a really good design from back in the old days that worked well. And, you know, it wasn't my favorite, but I saw it and I'd be like, okay, we have to be careful with the light level here because that's a lot of, you get a lot of vertical foot candles out of that fixture. You got to be careful with that. You're right. Lamp positioning in the fixture.
Look at you sum up the right way to say it. I said about 10 sentences there, and that's all you had to say was that. Lamp positioning.
There you go.
All right.
Oh, all you LED guys that weren't in the regular business, you don't know anything about vertical base up, eh? You don't know anything about that, eh? Interesting. Yeah. That's a different kind of fixture, bro.
That is for sure. Ballast location. Is it in the fixture? Is it remote mounted? I've seen a lot of pole lights where the area light is on top and the ballast is on the bottom of the pole.
Especially older facilities. You'd see them banks on the walls in older facilities. You'd see these like banks. What the hell is that? Well, that's the ballast for the outdoor lighting and it goes through the wall and out.
Note that for sure because that can make a difference. The mounting height, that's pretty obvious. You'd want to know the mounting height. You know, if it's a pole light, they can be 50 feet or higher at times. If it's a wall pack, Depends on the size of the building. If it's an apartment complex, I've had lighting that's been 3, 4, 5 stories high in an apartment complex. So
yeah,
that factors into what you're going to do. And, you know, there's a, even higher that you can get to. How are they accessible? Now, number one, you're assuming they're accessible. And typically that's the case. I have run into a few that at some point they were accessible, but now they're not, or there's some issue getting to them. It's a major issue getting to them. So you do need to factor that in, obviously, with as with any light.
Yeah, those ladder trucks get like 95%, but sometimes you got to bring in one of those articulating booms or something because of the grass or something's in the way or whatever, you know. So you got to be careful with what equipment you need, because there's a big difference between a your ladder truck rolling in and just doing the job and then having to rent a piece of equipment and send it there. But that's really project management at the same time. So not everybody's doing
that. Yeah. No, you're for sure right about that. And I did an apartment complex that had a 4 stories high, and it was a swimming pool in the back. And it was steps going up to the swimming pool. So you had to mount, you had to be 100 feet away to get up 4 floors. Try to do that. Maybe not 100, but it was, you know, it shut down a city block. You're talking $5,000 just to access it. Now you can change the light.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Shutting down, yeah, that's another thing. So you've shut down, like, streets in the city as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've shut down a couple streets in Toronto. Yeah, it's but you get into the downtown core of Toronto, and you can't roll a scissor lift down King Street, son. You right. The cops are going to come and say, what the hell are you doing here, buddy? Where's your permit?
Yep.
You know, and then you got to, there's all this protocol for, you know, pedestrians. I remember this one time we were supervising this job. It was a heritage building, and we were doing their facade lighting over an LED, and we had to paint all the conduit and like to make it match the color of the brick. And it was a very, very high end job. It worked out amazing. And, but we did all sorts of extra things, but we had to shut down the street in the night. Mm-hmm. And right next door was a theater. And at one point the guys were up on a scissor lift doing this lighting. And I have this picture, and there's like people streaming around the scissor lift around the outside with the two cops there pointing them around. I'm like, this is nuts. You're changing lights up here, and there's like literally hundreds of people walking by our scissor lift on King Street with the street shut down. It's wild stuff, dude, when you get into those cool jobs downtown. But hey, whatever. Every city's different.
Yeah, for sure. So you do need to note that, though, because that's going to make a huge difference in what you're proposing.
For sure.
Are the lights in the correct location? That's obvious with any lighting job. You need to know that they're in the spot that they need to be, or do they need to add light in the area? Like going back to the job I mentioned that I was at today, they need to add lights because they have an area that doesn't have any light currently, and obviously they have a security concern there. So you need to factor that in and understand that. And then if you need to add lights, you need to know how you're getting power to it. That's another item you always have to consider. And then how much room is in the existing fixture? So that's an important part with exterior lighting, especially if you're trying to retrofit, and we all know cobs are a pretty popular item and we can all have our own opinion on those, but, trying to jam a cob into a lot of exterior fixtures is difficult. You know, the size of them to get the lumen output you need sometimes, like if you're trying to replace a 400 watt, there are companies that have come out with, you know, better and better options, but the initial cobs were twice the size of a 400 watt metal halide. And if you don't have room in that fixture for twice the size of the bulb that's in there now, you can't retrofit it.
So yeah, I've had nothing but problems with those corn cob lights.
Yeah.
We concentrate on corn light.
We concentrate. Yes, exactly. So yeah, you don't want to concentrate on corn light. You want to have the corn light option, but don't concentrate on it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always seemed like and I know that there's a lot of great products out there in the market, but there's something about 400 watt HID and a cob that just says to me, Mickey Mouse. It's like the old big fat CFLs. Get that crap out of here. Yeah. Like, get that fixture out of here and put in a proper fixture. Don't try to save that metal halide. I don't know. I know that a lot of our sponsors have great products like that, and sometimes it's a good idea if somebody just wants to go cheap and cheerful on that. But there's something Mickey Mouse about cobs to me. I don't know if we're going to lose a sponsor or two over that one. But
No, you're right. And I think they all understand that too. But it's an option you need to have. But like you said, and you might have named the title of this one, is Don't Concentrate on Cob.
Don't concentrate on corn light.
Corn light, yeah. All right, so you need to know that. And the light distribution type can matter, especially on area lights and pole lights. Is it, a type one through five, basically? And we don't need to get into all those,
Yeah,
but
that's an
there's
episode, but
different.
the toughest one is, those, I don't know what their name, there's a name for them. Do you know they're 360 omni and it doesn't
Type
produce a
five.
lot? What's that?
It's a type five distribution typically.
Yeah,
Like
so
it
there's not
sits
a
on
lot.
top of a pole.
Yeah, those are tough to replace with LED actually sometimes. You have to get into like three fixtures sometimes to replace one of those.
Yeah, depending on what wattage it is and what the
Yeah.
application is, but there are
Yeah,
some
the
nice LED fixtures that have type five ratings
Yeah,
that you
I
can
know
do.
that there's some good retrofits, especially for the post top style where it's base down. That
Yeah.
plays very well the Cobb lights because you get those big globe reflectors or whatever where there's lots of room in there. But yeah, so the Cobb lights, I'm with you, but I'm not with you at the same time.
Yep.
So
So what else is there anything else you can think of on exterior lighting and the current fixture, what you need to factor in?
I mean, we did the deep dive. I think there's a larger issue. I think that cities and municipalities need to start legislating lower Kelvin temperature on their outdoor lighting, and dark sky compliance, whether they don't already have it. I'm sure it's buried in ASHRAE somewhere in one of those documents that nobody ever reads, when they're doing lighting jobs. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like, yeah,
exactly.
technically it should be done, but like, it's like the books are like this, right? So yeah, it's
Nobody's
somewhere.
policing it.
Yeah, there's. So I think they need to make clear Kelvin temperature laws. Like, no, our code is based on ASHRAE. What? No, dude, just make the law about Kelvin temperature clear for everybody so that we can get away from 5,000 K and get into lower Kelvin temperatures outside. That would be my
I like
opinion,
that.
Mr.
Yeah, I like that. And just as a whole, kind of my
Erich.
feeling on exterior lighting is I'm typically going to recommend a new fixture. I think that's typically the right thing to do when you're exterior lighting. But a retrofit can work if you have a real high quality, nice looking fixture
Sure.
that has
Yep.
adequate room and is in the correct location and they're getting the correct lighting, then you can retrofit it. There are a
There's
lot of
always
those.
problems though with retrofit. There's a lot of like, oh, it doesn't fit, or the light's not the same. You end up with a lot of problems with that retrofit sometimes.
Yep.
We've done a lot of it,
So,
but
yeah, you
yeah.
do need to factor that in, but it can be a viable solution because if you're in a application where they have a real high-end area light or a bollard or a post top that, to buy a brand new fixture is several thousand dollars when a Cobb can be a couple hundred, a lot of times
Yeah.
you need to go that route. So.
Yeah. There you go. One of my suppliers that supplied us a lot of retrofit kits for outdoor just left Canada. So we're going to
Gone.
see. Yeah. I wonder why.
Yep.
So
So
we'll see how
yeah,
it works out for us.
that's what I had for the deep dive on exterior lighting. I know we can always go deeper,
Yeah,
and
we
we've
can.
gotten some comments on our last deep dive. We're throwing this stuff out there. If anybody ever wants to come on a show and get deep with us, we're willing to do it. Let's go.
Yeah, you know what? If you I, we love comments, negative and positive, folks, and we don't know everything. We just talk about everything. So if you want to come on the show, by all means, email us, fill out the form on getagriponlighting.com. I think there's a form there, isn't there, Greg?
Yeah,
There's like a
there's.
come on the show form. Come on the show, son. Or leave us some
Come
comments
on.
on YouTube. I think we get back to almost all the comments, so check it out.
Definitely.
But for right now, thanks for listening to Michael and Greg talk about the exterior lighting deep dive. Exciting stuff. Keystone Technologies. Go to KEYSTONETECH.com, baby, KeystoneTech.com, and check out their expander series of Cobbs. Greggy.
Again, if you are going to concentrate or even consider selling Cobbs, which it does make sense in some
Yeah,
applications, as
sometimes
we
it does.
mentioned in the podcast, Keystone has a great option for you. In addition to the expander that can go out to 180 degrees and focus light where you want it, they also have their smart drive and direct drive series where you can bypass the ballast or reuse the ballast in a metal halide or hypersodium application. So check that out if you are looking at Cobbs or if you're in need of them for any exterior lighting retrofits.
Of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to naild.org. That's nailed.org for information on joining the association, hanging out with Greg and I in Reno and the rest of our peeps. And finally, Greg, what do you got against Monopoly with real cash?
That sounds intense. I don't like Monopoly to begin with. And then if you want me to put $4,000 of real cash in, I'm going to pass.
Why? What's wrong with you, man? You're rich. You're Moneybags Eric. Come on,
No,
man.
that's too much money, and I don't like Monopoly. How about
Oh,
that?
dude, you gotta play Monopoly. So I've only done it once, and it's super intense, dude.
That sounds like
Super
it.
intense. I ended up being the last two, and I got bankrupted by the guy. But man, I think we played for 5 hours. Super fun, man. So I think you guys, anybody up for Monopoly with real cash in Reno, email the Get a Grip on Lightning podcast because I want to get a game going down there with anybody that likes to play a little real deal kind of thing. And yeah, thanks for listening to the Exterior Deep Dive. We love you guys, all you Lightning dorks out there. Unite in Reno.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, Lord is there to find you.